Welcome to this week's episode of Thriving Through Menopause with me, Clarissa. Before we delve into this discussion today, I want you to give a little trigger warning on this because we are going to talk about sexual trauma. There may be conversations that touch on rape, and I want you to just take care of yourself in this conversation in case you have ever been subjected to this or some of those things upset you in any way. But with that, I hope you're going to enjoy this episode and going to learn a lot in it as well. Because trauma is part of our menopause journey. For many of us, things that have happened to us prior to going into perimenopause can really come right around and affect our menopause experience in ways that we're not maybe prepared for. And sometimes this is a time in our life when we have to address that trauma. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Anissa Hudak. She's a yoga therapist and founder of Trauma Healing Yoga Therapy. Welcome to the show, Anissa.
Thanks for having me on.
Listen, you work with women who have been sexually traumatized and help them to heal the PTSD and the other trauma-related issues that we have as a result of our experiences. And I know that you are yourself a 2x rape survivor.
I am.
And we may too well touch on some of your experiences that brought you to this place. But maybe as a start, I mean, we hear sexual trauma, but give a sense of how big this is in amongst women, in the let alone the US, but the rest of the world too.
Statistic-wise, they're saying it's 1 out of every 4 women. However, because of underreporting, we actually think it's 1 out of every 2 women. So that means 1 out of every other woman has somehow been touched by this.
That's huge. That's absolutely huge. And you're right, there's a lot of underreporting. We don't report what we think sometimes, I don't know, we've been socialized to think is part of me having to do whatever I'm supposed to do to be a woman. But it is still traumatizing, isn't it? And when we say sexual trauma, what exactly can fall into that bucket?
Well, there's incest, molestation, there is sexual assault, rape, and there's different types of rape. You know, most people think that rape is, you know, a guy that you don't know pulling you down a back alley, or breaking into your apartment late at night and having his way with you. And that's one version. More than likely, you know the person who is raping you. There is things called coercion rape, where, you know, I'm going to hurt someone if you don't do this. There's also, you know, I was on a date with a guy, very first date with a guy. And as we were driving home, he said, well, where are we going to pull off? And I said, pull off for what? And he's like, well, I bought you dinner, so you have to blow me.
Yeah.
I was like, here's $20 and take me to my house. You know, I mean, that's coercion rape. You know, do you want a promotion? You need to sleep with me. That's coercion rape. So being coerced, they may not tie you down, but by words or by actions, you're being coerced into doing something. And so, you know, sexual assault looks like a lot of different things.
Doesn't it just? I mean, and I think some of us will have heard that in our workplaces where we've been coerced into situations with a boss or a client and then told to keep quiet about it. By people like HR who are supposed to have your back, and that's very common. Somebody who takes off their condom, Anissa, non-consensually, is a form of rape. And I'm sad to say that that has happened to me. I was deeply shocked because I thought I was an empowered woman. And I'm much smaller than the person involved. So that is also traumatizing and a form of rape in some ways, because he violated what had been agreed between us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So this is so common. So I think, listeners, if you're hearing this, these are some of the things that can be part of our everyday life. And of course, your partner can rape you.
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
They can.
Just because you are in a committed relationship, whether it's married or not, if you say no, the answer's no.
Yeah.
And you have the right. It's not a wifely duty to have to sleep with your spouse whenever they deem necessary.
No, definitely not. And yet those are the things that often then go unreported. Or we don't even speak about them again. We kind of bury them, don't we?
Absolutely. And, you know, for a lot of people, well, there's no bruises.
Yeah, of course.
But there might not be physical bruises. However, the emotional toll that is taking on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and obviously we have the whole thing with domestic violence. You know, how many of those women are truly coerced on a daily basis because they don't want to die. They don't want to be beaten to death. And I mean, that's a whole other can of worms, if you will. So, sexual assault looks like a lot of different things.
And that, as you say, one in two of us can probably relate to along the journey. And certainly when we get into midlife, I doubt there are actually many of us who would say something like this hasn't happened along the way to us.
You know, it's really interesting. What I'm finding is, and I'm now in menopause, and I turned 50 this week. So I work with women who are, you know, of this age bracket. And what I'm finding, and I feel it myself, is that, you know, a lot of the time, the sexual assault incident happened earlier on, early 20s, maybe, yeah. Maybe before you got married, maybe over the course of your marriage. However, you got busy with life. You wound up having children, you're very busy with that career, husband or spouse or what have you. And now you're at a point where it's, you know, you're transitioning. So it's a huge change in life. Hormones are all over the place.
Yeah.
So emotionally, you know, things are different for you. You're starting to really embrace that whole empty nest syndrome. You know, your children are gone. Maybe you've reached maybe the glass ceiling or however far you're going to go in your career. Things are kind of starting to wind down a little bit. You have a little bit more time. There's more bandwidth. And all of a sudden, this thing pops up. And you're like, oh, crap. I can't run away from this anymore. I can't bury it anymore. I really need to deal with this. And it's really about coming to terms. And so you're taking menopause, which is already unhinging you, and you're adding this other layer to it, this other thing that you have to really unbox and process and deal with. And when you're doing that with the emotions and the hormones being what they are, it's a lot.
It is. Because we already feel emotional about everything. At this time of life,
everything
is, as you said, thrown up into the air in many ways. And if we bury these things quite deeply inside ourselves, those issues are still in the tissues, aren't they? And he said they're not released. They're held as spittle and corsets.
Yes, ma'am. We do hold the trauma literally in our cells. And they do need to be released. And when you've held them on for that long, you know, it's going to take a little bit to get it all out. And then you're doing it in a very vulnerable state because you are having this withdrawal of hormones and changes to your body and things like that. And so it's a lot.
It is. It is a lot. It's like we're confronting it. But if we don't confront it, then it's going to come up in some other way, isn't it?
your body will scream. At some point, your body will let you know that you've got to get this dealt with. Whether it's an autoimmune disease or cancer, yes, your trauma can create diabetes and cancer in your body. You know, it's not something that you think about or a correlation between, but yeah, it can happen. Yeah. And so at some point, you got to deal with this, and better do it when your body's not screaming.
Well, yes. Yeah, generally better. We're better able to process that.
You know, you're already dealing with it when you're hormonal and your hormones are withdrawing and you're going through, you know, perimenopause and menopause. Better to do it now than when you have cancer or heart disease or diabetes.
Yeah. And I think because we're not talking about it, and this is why we're talking about it, is so that we can address it in these years so that it doesn't linger anymore in our bodies. And I mean, what I've heard from other therapists is that if we have this unaddressed trauma in perimenopause, then it will make our symptoms much worse. And is that your experience personally or in the clients that you see?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because you have other chemicals that are racing through your body because of the trauma. The trauma actually creates other types of hormones and chemicals within your body. So you have an overabundance of that, plus the withdrawal of the other hormones. It just really wreaks havoc with the body in general. And then you add into it the emotional state that creates. And it can make menopause pretty hard going. I had a very difficult perimenopausal state, and I finally went into surgical menopause in August. And I am now on estrogen, and I am loving life. I have to tell you, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But I finally had to, I lost 6 organs in one day. It was pretty amazing. And when I woke up, I actually felt relief immediately.
Wow. From just that release of these, because that was where it was holding on, wasn't it? There.
Maybe some of it. I had been having problems with my reproductive organs for far too long. And I truly felt relief. Something that I found out, though, from my surgery, my surgeon asked if he could take my appendix. And I said,
okay.
He said, well, it's down there. It's in that area. You know, quite frankly, we really don't know what it does. And you don't necessarily need it. But what we have found is that it actually plays a part in the pain women are feeling in their pelvic area. And so because of that, I try to take as many appendixes as I can. I said, hey,
go for it.
I said, if there's anything else down there that you want to take that I don't need, go for it. You know, mount it on your wall. I don't care what you do with it. You know, he said, no, just the 6 organs. You know, I said, all right, that's fine. And truly, when I woke up in recovery, I saw him and he was like, oh, good, you're already awake. How are you feeling? I said, I can already feel a difference. I feel like a brick has been taken out of my abdomen. And within hours, I was up and walking the halls and feeling amazing.
That's incredible. That's the first time I've ever heard that about an appendix. That was like, whoa. I mean, I lost my appendix at 12. So I had extreme pelvic pain. So maybe he's right. Very difficult periods. You know, I had a very nosy mother for the listeners. She was one of those women who, sort of mother you would go, why is she asking me about my periods? There's no girl that wants that. But she was very like, she was recording and what they were like. And she went to Dr. Shen. She doesn't have periods that look like they should look, was all she said, you know. This is the days before they didn't put teenage girls on the contraceptive pill, of course. And then I had an appendicitis and they took it out and they also found that I had some ovarian cysts. So I'm probably very grateful for that operation because it saved a lot of pain and problems. But I'm fascinated that the appendix could be contributing. But then it's very close to our pelvic area. So who knows?
Who knows? I just know that I have been loving life since this finally occurred. The worst part about it was the hormones. I opted, leaving the hospital, I opted not to take any hormones because I felt great. And 2.5 weeks later, the bottom fell out. And I now know where Karens come from. I joke because, wow, it was tough. However, I did get on a patch. And then I met with another doctor who really deals with menopausal hormones. And I wound up increasing my patch. And I am just loving life. And she said, which I was really surprised about this, she said that she has women who are in their 80s who are still taking estrogen. As long as it's not contributing to any medical conditions, she said, you can wear one till the day you die. And I'm like, well, just sign me up. It's been wonderful.
Great.
So that's been, and so, yeah, I really feel for women because I know what I felt like before and now what I feel like now. And I'm like, yeah, the estrogen is helpful.
But this is coming on top of, obviously, the yoga therapy work that you practice and do.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Tell me, Anissa, how you got into yoga therapy, and then we'll talk about how that works for sexually traumatized women.
I had absolutely no intentions of ever teaching yoga, ever. I took a teacher training class because I wanted to do yoga on my own. I didn't want to be on anybody else's schedule. I didn't want to be a slave to anybody else's class timing. So I went ahead and I took a teacher training class, and I was about like halfway through it. And I realized, gosh, I really love this. This is, for me, it was a gift. Yeah. And I didn't want to teach it. I wanted to share this gift. So I started taking more and more teacher training classes because I just really enjoyed it. And the people that I was surrounded with, I just loved. I loved the energy. And the school that I was going through, they were offering classes for PTSD, for military. My husband at the time was active duty. We live in a huge community of active duty and retired. And I was like, you know, I should take this class and bring it back to my community, be of service to them. And I was about, again, halfway through the first day. And I realized that the first person I needed to work on was like right here, that PTSD had really crawled into the nooks and crannies of my life and was holding me back. And by doing what I was doing on the mats, I felt freer. And I felt this huge release and relief. And so I started doing it more and more, taking more and more classes. And before I knew it, here I am. I'm a yoga therapist and I specialize in PTSD and TBIs, traumatic brain injuries.
Amazing, amazing story for you. But yoga therapy is different from the yoga you do down the yoga studios.
It is.
Tell me a little bit about that. So people may know, I think there's not many of us now who don't know yoga, and very few of us who've probably never tried at least one class. But yoga therapy is a field in itself, is it?
It is. If you were to look at yoga as a big pie, split it down the middle. On one half, we have yoga that you find in your neighborhood yoga studio, fitness-based, very fun, you know, Bikram and Ashtanga and co-ed naked hot yoga and aerial yoga and, you know, all kinds of fun stuff that are great physical fitness kind of things. Can you have emotional releases? Absolutely. All yoga is healing. However, on the other side of the pie, we have yoga therapy. And within yoga therapy, we have little niches. You know, people do yoga therapy for cardiac rehab and cancer and addiction. We work with a particular group of people that are trying to reach a goal of some sort. You know, there's yoga therapy for Parkinson's and MS. And I just happen to work with PTSD and yes. TBIs.
Yes, that's wonderful, because then it's more of a program, isn't it, than rock up for class and get into triangle both, if I've understood it correct.
It is. You know, we do certain things. We cue in different ways. You know, the lights always remain on. I always remain on my mat. Yeah. I don't walk around. I don't touch my clients unless it's absolutely necessary. And I ask them beforehand and before I even leave the mat. And there are no straps. We do poses in a particular way to not only maximize your time on the mat, but also to really get into the deep, deep muscles that hold on to this trauma. And what we're essentially trying to do is get these muscles to release. And, you know, the bottom line is we're trying to reset your central nervous yeah. system. And we can do this effectively using the yoga therapy.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, that's just so different because, no, I can imagine if you are particularly a sexually traumatized person, the last thing you want is someone touchy. And I actually dislike it when somebody comes and pushes you or moves you around without permission. I find that quite intrusive. And they may move me in a place I don't necessarily want to be moved into. But I can imagine if you have been sexually traumatized, that creates extra tension, not release. Am I correct there?
It can very well, yeah.
And the science behind yoga therapy, because there is a fair bit of science behind it.
There is. And that's what really amazed me was that when I was taking these classes, I was like, this is all science. Like, this isn't smoke and mirrors. There's no voodoo here. I don't need a wand. Like, this is actual science. It's biology. There's a lot of biology, a lot of psychology. And this is not, you know, a very easygoing kind of physical-based yoga. There's a lot that goes into it before we even get on the mat. And so you really want to find yourself a professional who is accredited to do this with because there is a lot that goes into
this. Yes. So so you said it even starts off the mat. What does that look like for someone who's never been in yoga therapy, never gone to yoga therapy, should I say?
You know, I don't think anybody would notice anything. It's more about me. Right. It's about, you know, kind of assessing how everyone is feeling in the room, what is needed, looking at just the way you're carrying your body. Kind of just really assessing what is your need for that moment and being able to meet you where you're at.
Yeah. Yes. So if I understand, you're probably doing a lot of observing of your people, how they sound, how they move, how they breathe,
how they look. What's their facial expression? How are they answering me? What is their vocal tone? Are they moving slowly? Are they moving quickly? You know, is their anxiety coming forward, or is it their depression that's forward facing right now? Are they just tired? You know, all kinds of things that come into play, because, you know, the last thing I want to do is have a really vigorous session with someone who has anxiety. That's the last thing they need. They actually need something that's a little slower to help them calm down from that anxiety. Someone who is depressed, we need the opposite. You know, someone who's tired, well, that might require something different than a typical, and there's no such thing as typical, but a typical session. It might include having some yoga nidra done. Yoga nidra is amazing. It is, if you haven't experienced it, it's like meditation, almost like a guided meditation. However, 20 minutes of yoga nidra rest is equivalent to 2 hours of sleep. And for those of us who deal with trauma, sometimes sleep is an issue.
Definitely. Definitely, because sometimes you're unable to get to sleep because these things are playing in our heads, or we wake up in the middle of the night and these things are playing in our heads. The stories, the memories are very hard. Yeah, I trained with Richard Miller. I did the iRest program with Richard, and I got to meet him in person, so I felt very privileged living in Sydney because he doesn't travel so much now. But he was it was a phenomenal experience. And of course, the whole of that is centered around PTSD.
Absolutely, yes. And he has a wonderful program. And I absolutely adore yoga nidra. So, and I use it quite frequently because it is so applicable for PTSD.
Absolutely. And I think it was like, it wasn't designed for PTSD. It was like, well, maybe it was. We don't know because its history is that long and people have always had PTSD without having a name for it thousands of years ago. So I'm sure it has its origins in some way intuitively for that. But I also think when you talk about this sort of individualization, I realize that if women just go off to a yoga class and they have this trauma that they're carrying with them, it could trigger a disassociation or a re-trigger the experience, could it? Things are not managed well, say you just went off and did.
Yeah. It could be. And, you know, without having an instructor or a yoga therapist who is trained in this, you could, depending on how your outburst is, your release, your emotional release, you could be kicked out of class as a disturbance. And that's the last thing that you need, you know? So you really want to be in a place where people understand. Yes. And there's safety protocols. I have safety protocols in my classes. You need to have those in place. It's important to keep everyone protected and safe. And again, these are things that go on in yoga therapy and not in your typical yoga studio class.
Yeah, and that makes total sense because that's what goes on in therapy and in, as you and I are both mindfulness practitioners. So yes, if we are properly trained, we operate with protocols there. There are about that are meant to be trauma-informed and paced. And we have risk assessments for people. We don't just say, hello, come and sit and meditate with us, or push out things. We contain that space. So it's incredibly safe. And at any time, a person, I'm sure in your class too, can opt out. You know, if it gets tough, you can sit, you can lie down, just go back to focusing your feet or whatever it is feels okay.
You know, a lot of people find that Shavasana, which is final relaxation, you know, generally you lie flat on a mat and it's almost kind of very spread eagle. It's very kind of naked. Yeah. It's kind of vulnerable. Yeah. In my class, you can lie on your back, you can lie on your side, you can lie on your stomach, you can have pillows and blankets and bolsters and whatever it is you need to feel comfortable. I have eye masks available if you want to block out the light, however the light remains on. Yes. Or you don't, and you don't have to use one. There's so many options on how to make yourself feel comfortable, because that's necessary. Shavasana is where you do the most important work of your entire session. And so best be as comfortable as possible in order to do that work. Generally, during Shavasana, it's very quiet. Yeah. Not in my class. We never leave you alone with your thoughts, because that's where the scary stuff lies.
Yes.
And I'm not a talk therapist. That is not my scope of practice. So I'm constantly talking. It's kind of like the Anissa stand-up hour. Very integrative. We're always talking together. However, during Shavasana, I usually read loud. I read yoga poems. I have a book of essential oils, the emotional aspects of essential oils. I read, and you have just a very few moments that you're alone with your thoughts, just enough. And then I bring you back out of it. And generally what happens is, you know, everyone feels quite refreshed. And inevitably someone will say, can I try that essential oil? Do you have that? So,
yeah.
You know, it's wonderful. But yes, there are different things that occur in my class that don't occur in your typical class.
Absolutely. And I think that that has resonance for me personally. I mean, you know, in mindfulness classes, people want to lie on the floor, or they want to be propped up, or they want to be sit on a chair. Do whatever is right for you. And in a yoga nidra class, I mean, we pretty much talk people with only short breaks. I mean, it's a led practice. It's not a non-led practice. It's not a led practice. It's very much it's not silent at all. I mean, and that would be wrong if it was a silent thing, because it's meant to be anchoring all the way back to where we want to be. But say someone has been sexually traumatized, this is impacting their menopause experience, impacting their life, and they're beginning to realize they need to address it in some way. How do they begin on that journey?
How do they begin? Well, I would, you know, suggest finding someone to talk to. I would suggest going to see a doctor about balancing hormones. I would suggest potentially even medication for the PTSD, potentially, if it's deemed necessary. You know, talk therapy is great. However, your PTSD started in your body first before it manifested as a mental health issue. And so as much as you need to work it out of your mind, you also need to work it out of your body. And so getting in with someone who does this, yoga therapy, is important. That being said, yoga therapy for PTSD, for trauma, sexual trauma, is not the end all, although I think it is. I think it's great. There are other ways for you to work out your trauma. If you are into martial arts, it could potentially be done that way. Running.
Yes.
For a lot of people, you know, that works well for them. So there are other ways of doing it. Again, I'm biased. I have therapy. But I won't say that one is better than the other. It's really based on the person, you know. Our healing journey is our own individual healing journey. And just because this works for me doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for everybody. And that's okay. You need to find what works best for you. And so it's a bit of a journey. It's, you know, you have to try different things to really figure out what works best for you. And so you have to be willing to try.
I think that's true. And there isn't a quick fix to this. This is truly something we have to work through.
Absolutely. There is no silver bullet. There is no magic pill. There is no voodoo spell to make this go away. It sucks. And the only way to get through it is to get through it. However, life on the other side of it is so much better.
Yeah.
You just need to work through it. And there is no easy way to do it.
No, we have to meet it where it is and work with it. And I think that's the first brave step, that we are admitting that this is there and that it's, and we have buried, I think, as we said earlier on, we have buried this and it's inside ourselves because of shame, because of guilt, or because we didn't even think that it was a thing, because we've been socialized that some of this stuff is kind of a suck it up, or it's part of being a woman, or whatever the heck it is. And that's just not okay. It's not right. And we get called, I think menopause, as we said, is a huge calling for us to shake down what isn't working for us and reframe our lives.
It is a huge transition. It's a huge reset. It really is. It's a huge reset for yourself. And I felt that way afterwards. I was like, you know, that whole chapter of my life is over. You know, I'm never going to have children again. And that's okay, because I don't want any more. You know, I mean, okay with that. But it is your body, your hormones, your emotions, everything is such in flux, and it's just a reset time for your body. You know, you're beginning a new chapter. And don't you want to start that chapter with a blank sheet?
I love that so much. Just a fresh sheet and say, now I'm moving into the next. And I'm not going to carry all this baggage with me into the next stage.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. Anisa, how can people get in touch with you, learn more about the work that you do, listen to your podcasts?
TraumaHealingYoga.com. Everything is there. I'm on all the major socials. I'm kind of like a bad penny. I just keep showing up. Trauma Healing Yoga. I am not groovy. I'm not on TikTok or Snapchat or anything like that. I'm just on all the old people socials, Facebook, IG, and Pinterest, YouTube, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm not groovy.
We're not groovy here either. I've decided that I don't understand TikTok, and I'm not dancing on there or anything else. And I'm not very comfortable. And some of the things on there make me very uncomfortable. So we're on the same channels, Anisa, there.
It's all good. But no, really, everything's at the website, traumahealingyoga.com. And I do everything now online. And so I am able to work with women all around the world, which is amazing, because I live in a little town here in Kansas, and the livestock outnumber the people, and the cows just weren't into the yoga.
Oh, no, they usually aren't.
The bison like it, but The cows do not. Go figure. So, no, I'm able to work with women all over the country, all over the world, and it's been amazing. So that's where you can find
me. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to put all of that into the show notes so that those of you who have listened and it's sparked your interest, it's maybe triggered you to think differently, then here is a space for you to go and begin a healing journey if that's right for you. Anissa, thank you so much for coming on and sharing insights into sexual trauma, menopause, and the power of yoga therapy.
Well, I appreciate being on and being able to chat with your listeners. And thank you so much.
My pleasure.